That's right. That's the a cappella group. You may certainly be able to tell that. Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give Your Hands to Struggle. It's from their, let's see, what year was that? 1992 album. And Give Your Hands to Struggle was made famous, actually. And I like playing it as often as I can because it's such a beautiful a cappella harmonization among the women. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we pick up from where we left off yesterday. Let's see, where did we leave off yesterday? We had quite a few things in the works. So let's return to this. Well, one thing. Tomorrow, we have the vice presidential candidates squaring off with each other. That's going to be in Utah, I believe. Yes, that's going to be in Utah. And we hear what they have to say, but that's tomorrow. We have the vice presidential candidates squaring off. But we still haven't been able to get Donald Trump to just move out of the way, go someplace quiet and sit down, take his meds and calm down. We really don't need any more exposure to this president who is unraveling rapidly and is causing an international embarrassment. Certainly, it should feel that way at home, that there seems to be nobody to rein him in. They just basically, every day he gets worse and more outrageous in his conduct and behavior. We don't know what's next. This is very embarrassing. But I saw it and I said something about it 4 years ago that he's not right in his head. Or maybe, the flip side of the coin could also be a possibility that this he has taken notes on exactly what his environment is. And this, he has decided, is the most effective way to control everybody in his environment. That means that he doesn't have to talk to them. He doesn't have to interact with anybody. He just does whatever it is he wants to do because that's his version. That's his testament to power. He can do whatever he wants, whenever he wants to do it. But we haven't gotten the kind of reaction we should have gotten from Congress. There should have been some kind of plan afoot that certainly should be raised in Congress. We cannot have a head of state behaving this way and pretending it's not happening. At some point, it's going to become necessary to address the question: can this country continue down the path he has put it on, where he is the center of attention, he is making all the rules, he is the person who basically he's saying to everybody, this is my country, this is my property. I could do whatever it is I want to do, and there's nothing you can do about it. And he's been right for 4 years so far. Nobody has done anything about it. There has been no effort made in Congress to remove him from office or to require him to seek treatment or to take some kind of emergency measure to get the country out of his clutches. And so he has come to regard it as, in fact, it's true. I do own this country. I could do whatever it is I want to do. They can't do anything to me. They won't do anything to me. So he becomes more and more outrageous and outlandish in his behavior. God alone knows what's in his head, but he continues down that path, the path of destruction and chaos and total disorganization. None of his efforts really have to do with serious issues affecting the people. It's primarily, look, I'm taking care of my business first, and in some cases, I'm taking care of my business only. You just happen to be here, but I could fix that too. I could make it so that you would disappear. So this is a major question. It has not been the subject of public discussion. And in those cases, those few cases where this has come up as a topic of discussion, they're just merely skimming the surface. Nobody's getting close to what they think the real problem is, or what the real problems are, because he's a man of many problems. And how do we move him out of the way? We even had a group of psychiatrists and psychologists and people who are well versed in the matter of mental health issue a report last year. And again, they repeated it this year, issued a new report, updated it with the same bad news. And of course, it went the way of the dodo bird. Nobody paid it very much mind. But we have a major crisis on our hands, and it's going to come down to, I think, Trump taking his flights of fancy even farther than they are now, and envisioning that he also has his own private army, and he can command them to do certain things, to attack this or attack that. Maybe then people would say, this guy is crazy. They've had enough hints. They've had enough indication. And it has been the analysis of paralysis, or the paralysis of analysis. Which one? I don't know. But we have gotten nowhere in resolving this critical question, even as we approach another national election having to do with what? Him again. Who's going to be president of the United States again? So I do wish that we can see a very considered effort to put this on the table. We have to get over any embarrassment that we feel. We can't be any more embarrassed than he has made this country already. But it has to be resolved. It is very, very urgent that this matter be resolved. Okay, so I'm asking questions again today. And I'll talk about the Democratic Party this time and its unwillingness to part ways with plantation politics. The Democratic Party, there was hope some years ago that the Democratic Party was coming along, that it recognized that the world was different, and that it had to blend with the times. It had to take some cues about how do you help with leadership in a changing society. Because, frankly, the Democratic Party did not intend to change. It intended that the people should change. It doesn't have to change at all. And that goes for both parties. This is how they see politics. Politics is a license to rule and control. It has no expiration date. The people have expiration dates, but they don't. They're just in power. And they alternate in who gets to hold the reins of power every cycle. That's the understanding between the Democrats and Republicans. Somebody, some one of them, is going to be in charge. It's going to win, quote unquote, the right to control the country politically, economically, and in many, many ways that we don't even consider as being political. The resources of the country, where are they applied? Where do they go? Who makes a decision about the allocation of resources? What is the plan to make this country a bit more equal, fairer, and, dare I use the word, democratic? So we go through this cycle every time election time comes around. But the Democrats remain on the plantation in terms of their politics. Just like the Republicans, they have a different, more nuanced way of operating, but it's the same thing. The plantation, the politics of the plantation is what rules the country. They encourage us to think differently, that progress has been made, that there have been advancements, and this is due, in fact, to the input of the people. The people have had no input here. Let's stop kidding each other. You have a small group of people, and they control what happens to the society as a whole. And starting way back when, their point of reference was the plantation. No matter where you live in the United States, it's plantation politics. The hierarchy is organized according to the plantation. The economy is organized according to plantation experience. People's rights, so-called rights, all derivatives of plantation politics and experience. We haven't moved very far away from that at all. We are encouraged to think that in this way, in this manner, or matter, the Democrats are different from the Republicans. And that we ought to pay very close attention so that we can determine the fine points, the intricate differences, and align ourselves accordingly. So one election cycle, it may be the Republicans, and another election cycle, it would be the Democrats, and they alternate. But it's the plantation politics through and through. We haven't been able to impress upon either party that those days should be long gone. We ourselves, as the people, we too practice plantation policies and politics. We're not in a hurry to change things. And if there's going to be change, we wait for permission to expect change. In other words, we can't dictate change. We still recognize that even if we vote for it, even if we have a good idea of what it ought to be, somebody else is in charge of that decision. And in that regard, we can do nothing except observe. So years go by, decades go by, and there is no real mobility. There's no real change. If there is change, as we might define it, it's grudging, it's slow, and it still puts at the top of priorities the interests of the controlling elite. We have nothing to do with this. We don't call the shots. We are just expected like a cheap neighborhood play. Just show up and mutter whatever it is you got to mutter, do your part, play your part, recite your words, and get lost. And there, we'll write a little review that you were present and accounted for. You had a great role in this play, and we have changed. And of course, we know there's been no change, really. The kind of change that is necessary to effect anything approximating real equality will necessarily be radical. There's no appetite in this country for radical action, unless, of course, that action brings about the kind of change that the elite wants. They dictate that. Our job is simply to constantly adjust to what we are told to do. And then pretend that we too have been part of the process of change. No such thing. No such thing. So it would be good if we can see signs, consistent signs, from our communities that people have decided to be serious about this. Stop talking about it and start acting in accordance with the vision of it. We talk a lot. We talk too much. And we talk about the talk that we talk. But we don't get very much done. And that is the understanding of how power works in this country, or more correctly, how it does not work. Everybody knows what is expected of us, how we are supposed to behave, and how we are supposed to assist those in power in bringing about the vision they have. None of these items that are on the so-called ballot have anything to do with real change for the masses of people. And if they have those ideas in mind, we certainly don't know it. They have a version, because it starts out with the premise, you can't have change too fast. Look how long it took to build the country. People would put a silly argument like that before you. It took centuries to build this country. And you think that change should happen in a decade? Yeah, well, what's wrong with that? You caused change and disruption in a matter of days. And I didn't know that you have to stand in line and take your turn, which we control. We tell you when you can stand in line. We tell you when you can take a little bit of control in an area that isn't vital to our collective survival. We're just playing games. So this is where Donald Trump has been most instructive as a so-called leader. He doesn't mind that the people, in fact, the whole world, can see what he's thinking as a representative of the world that he is fashioning and shaping. He doesn't mind that anybody should know. In fact, he wants everybody to know. He has moved into this role of shaping the world. He has given himself that much power to shape the world. You may not like it. You may not agree with it, but that, why do you think that matters? It doesn't matter. He is fulfilling the primary interests of the people of which to which he belongs or to whom he belongs. He's observing the covenant. If I have power, you have power. How are you going to be mad at a guy like that? He's sharing power. Not necessarily evenly, but this is what keeps his base so loyal. He has given them a picture of how to return to this mythical state that they were in as the country was being formed of absolute and unquestionable superiority, supremacy. And that is enough to keep them loyal and to keep them fixed, not on their goals, but on his. Because if he succeeds, we all succeed. That's what people don't get. The people who are followers of Trump are not really interested in making up any new rules. They've been oriented already. They have the basics kind of down pat. What they look to Donald Trump for is he's a signal guy. He gives a signal that things are going according to plan. And we take care of the big picture first so that everybody understands the rules by which we will be operating. And then you distill it down from there so that everybody gets a piece of the power that they never used to have. You know, they get to feel very powerful because they belong now to a way of thinking and doing things that even the president belongs to. See, that's how it works. They're not even debating anymore among themselves, well, what should we do? No, because the relationship has been established. We trust him to make up our minds. We just want him to tell us when and how to do whatever it is we will comply with, what it is that we need to do to bring about this fictional world. But we will make it real, because the other guys, they just didn't have the guts. We had the guts. And we will proceed to make, you know, as the religious books say, that God made the world in his own image and likeness. That's exactly what Donald Trump thinks. He's here to make the world in his own image and likeness. We refuse to understand that. We still think that there's wiggle room, that we could sit down and talk and be reasonable. No, you can't do that. That's not part of the equation. Because that puts the whole thing out of kilter. It makes you, how should I say, it makes it a democratic, small d, process. It gives you a certain level of equality. We can't use these concepts. They actually contradict what is intended. But you have people who are so disillusioned, so out of touch with a reality that you would say, having suffered for generations, having been told all the stories and read all the histories and so forth, your head is screwed on right. But our heads are not screwed on right. So this is our homework. We have to figure out, do our interests matter enough for us to get resolute and strategic about how we accomplish them? And this is what we should be doing at this time, you know, with elections in the air and people talking about who's going to get elected and what they're going to do. But there isn't any talk going on in the most oppressed communities. They're not talking about what they're going to do. They're waiting for signals. They're waiting for permission. They're waiting for the big idea to be presented to them. And all they have to do is say, okay, we're in. And that is why, for the last few decades, there hasn't been much movement at all. There hasn't been much progress. There hasn't even been much talk about what people who remember what they've been through. What is the plan to avoid repeating that again and again and again? We don't have those conversations. So we are a truly vanquished people. When your hopes are stolen and you are totally rudderless, you have nothing that guides you. You are useless. If the issue is your own struggles for survival, for progress, for equality, for justice, those conversations will not be had. Nobody is really going to sit down with you and share with you how to position yourself for power. That has to come from you. If it doesn't come from you, well, you can't blame people for being uninterested, because it only confirms that whatever formula they managed to come up with, and these are not geniuses, it's just that they're working on various forms, various formulas that had been tried before and that proved very successful. So all they have to do is to repeat, you just repeat and you'll be all right. We don't do that. We wait for people to help us shape our future, help us make up our minds, help us decide what is in our best interest to do. Okay, fine. Just wait for that kind of help. And you would find by the time you wake up, several generations would have died out without accomplishing them. So let's talk a little bit about where things are and where you think they ought to be. How do we accomplish the very basics of taking greater control of our destiny, our shared destiny? Okay, but we have no evidence of that. What we have is immediate reaction. We let off our steam, but couple of months down the road, there's no evidence that there was any upheaval anywhere. We've lost the energy, we've lost direction, we've lost appetite for that kind of work. We just want to rest. We just want, to appeal to the better instincts of the people who are doing their best to put our lights out, as if that's a winning strategy. I'll take this break and come back to your thoughts right after this at 888-874-4888. We're listening to Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and the number to call is 888-874-4888. We're talking about how does change really happen? We can tell it's not happening the way it ought to happen. Not that there is a formula that you do this and then you do this, but we don't see evidence of forward movement. And in an orderly way, in a scientific way, designed in the end to gain more power and influence over our lives and the things that are important to us as a whole, right across. Doesn't matter whether you're Black, Latino, Asian, it's the same struggle. Ed from Jamaica, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. Good afternoon. How you doing?
Okay, good afternoon to you.
You asked a big question, and it's not an easy answer. I tend to
No.
disagree with you as far as change. Change is a process. Positive change is a process. Destruction is easy. That's why destruction can be manifested relatively quickly, because it doesn't take a lot of sense or a lot of forethought to destroy something. To build something and to change something, it takes effort and it takes persistence and it takes a clear vision. And that's hard in general, and specifically in America, because America doesn't believe in change. America believes in myths. The pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, the self-made man, all of these things are myths, because the community is what caused this country to be what it is, good, bad, or indifferent. The collective effort of many people is what caused America to last for so many hundreds of years. And the problem now, in my perception, is that people can't see their own best interest. They're clouded by prejudice. They're clouded by racism. They're clouded by hatred. They're clouded by classism. They can't see the forest for the trees. And they cut off their noses despite their faces. And it's going to take an effort to change that. The clear manifestation of that is Donald Trump. There's no reason that this man should be anywhere near the power.
What you just outlined, how long do you think it has been existing?
Say that again?
I'm sorry?
No, I missed, say that again, I missed part of you. We broke up a little bit.
What you just described about a prolonged period, many, many years, decades, of people adjusting. Every now and then, you know, there is an exception. You see a flare up here and a flare up there. But there isn't systemic change.
Well, it has to do with human nature. Most people like comfortability. Change is hard. Change is not. Change is an investment in growth and an investment in pain. Because most of the time to change something that is detrimental to you, you've got to, I've said it to you before. It's the famous Bob Marley lyric. Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. Everybody wants the perfect world. But the sacrifices that you have to make, the personal sacrifices, the group sacrifices, those things block you from your better nature. And at times when we've risen, when we've seen this country and the people in this country rise above this better nature, the civil rights movement, the suffragette movement, the labor rights movement, it's when the pain became more than the pleasure that accepting the pain gave you. And the powers that be in this country, the small fraction that runs this world, they realize that. That's why they give you a bone. That's why they give you distractions, like the Romans, bread and circuses, to keep you distracted, to not let that pain reach the apex point that motivates you to change. You don't lose weight. Most people don't lose weight because they want to. The majority of people lose weight because their health becomes an issue, and they're either going to die or change. Most people don't stop smoking because they want to. Most people stop smoking because they develop emphysema, or a doctor tells them, look, you're going to get cancer, or you've got first stage cancer, and you got to stop. And they change. Some don't, but most do, because most people don't want the ultimate end accumulation of death. So, unfortunately, this country's got to encounter a lot. The people in this country have to encounter a lot of pain and a lot of discomfort before they'll change. And the powers that be know that, and that's why they keep it at a minimum, or they spread it out. It's like the old science project. You can take a frog and put him in boiling water. He'll jump out. But if you take that same frog, put him in tepid water, and slowly increase the temperature of the water, that frog will sit there till he boils to death. We have to motivate the change within ourselves. That's the only way it's going to work. And it's a constant process.
How do we motivate change within ourselves?
Like Kwame Ture said, education and agitation. You got to educate the people. You got to let the people see what exactly is going on. Donald Trump is the distraction. What's really happening now? This is a huge economic reset. This COVID-19, half of the small businesses that closed in this country will not come back. Restaurants, mom and pop stores, local hardware stores, local groceries, local delicatessens. America, that has been the backbone of American business for many years, the small entrepreneur. Look around the neighborhood. What's replacing them? Target, Costco, Home Depot, Lowe's, All these big chain stores are replacing them. Jeff Bezos is making millions of dollars during a time when he should be making a dime. And we've got people that have been in business for several generations can't open their doors no more. Gotta look at what's going on. Don't pay attention to stupid clown and his distractions. Oh, I got the virus, or I don't got the virus, or this, or hydrochloroquine, blah, 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 whatever. Look at what's happening around you. Look at how the economy is being reset. There are some places that won't even take dollar bills anymore because, oh, they might have the COVID-19 virus on them. The different messages that come from the World Health Organization and the CDC. First, the virus couldn't survive on inanimate substances for less than 48 hours. Now it can survive for 3 days. Where's the science? Where's the logic? Where's the questioning? Where's the honest, not conspiratorial, but the honest reflect economic reset?
Oh,
that's how they're taking control.
That means, oh, there you are. You kind of blanked out for a minute, but that's not your doing. It's the system. But you're back with us. So finish your thought.
Well, what I'm saying is that you have to take a look at what's going on around you. This is like a massive economic reset. Small businesses are closing. They're not coming back. Huge chain stores are taking the place of those small businesses in neighborhoods that for generations have had the small hardware store, the small mom and pop grocery, the small retail store. Jeff Bezos is making billions of dollars during a time we shouldn't be making a dime. You know, you can't pay. Trump is the distraction. Look at what's happening in the country. Some places are not even taking paper dollars anymore because they're saying, oh, there's a chance that the virus might be on it. The mixed messages you're getting from the CDC, the mixed messages you're getting from the World Health Organization, all of these things, they're transpiring. It's beyond the Trump-Biden debacle. This is something that was planned and that's taking place. And it's taking place right in front of our eyes. And that's what we got to see.
Well, you put a lot of things on the table, Ed. I'm hoping somebody would react. Because we are long overdue for some logical action, and it's not happening. And it doesn't look like it would happen anytime soon. We get bursts of action. And they usually are about making whatever caused the burst to go away. But it's not sustained action. We react on a case-by-case basis. And that is not conducive to long-term change. But I'm not condemning. People do what they're the best they're able to do in the circumstances that they're in. I'm saying we have to come to a point where it becomes a priority to sit and think and put things down on paper and make plans and follow through. We cannot go from crisis to crisis thinking that we are accomplishing something, and we're not. Not really.
Vigilance is necessary, but it's difficult. You know, human nature tends to want comfortability. And once a crisis has been mitigated to a certain extent, people lay back and say, ah. But the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And it's hard. We've got few individuals that they stand out in history, Fannie Lou Hamer, Frederick Douglass, the Huey P. Newton, these people stand out in history as being guardians of the good and the right. And sometimes they get killed, sometimes they fade out. But it's hard. But hey, the price of freedom is vigilance. It's got to roll with it and keep the faith.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for calling in and contributing. We needed to hear that today. We needed to hear that. And I think we need to think more and more about these things. Because if we don't think about it, if we don't hear about it, then it just goes out of our minds. It's as if it never existed. These things never existed. 888-874-4888. What is this moment in time, historical time? What is it supposed to mean to us as a people? As people who say we are progressive, we're about creating change, the kinds of change that are long overdue, the kinds of change that we believe will in the end benefit the greater society. What does this time, a time like this, when elections are being held, do you put these two things together? That this is, on the one hand, we have the consistent movement every 4 years or every 2 years or whatever it is that the timetable is, but are we moving in an orderly fashion, in some kind of a logical fashion, toward improving our lot? Marcus from Wisconsin. Hello, Marcus. How are you?
Good afternoon, Ms. Leed. How are you?
Okay. Fine, thanks. I'm hanging in.
Glad to hear it. Every bet's a sure thing, I hope. the question, as I understand it, I mean, the actual question, the way Americans understand it is, how do I change society without changing anything I do? How do I effect change of the society in an easy way that doesn't interrupt what I like to do? That's the actual question. So your first caller today, who's customarily very astute, I was a bit surprised because he elucidated every single excuse from the population for doing nothing that I've heard for the last 60 years. Excuses about human nature. It's not human nature. Human nature is a biological concept. It means you grow two arms instead of two wings. When it comes to behavior, it's completely arbitrary. We understand almost nothing about human behavior. You had a caller yesterday accusing people of being stupid. That's not right. If you listen to, say, people who call in to sports talk radio, they make all kinds of elaborate, intricate arguments about sports. It requires a great deal of intelligence. They're not stupid. It's even worse than that. They care about trivia. They devote their intelligence to trivia. And that's why we ask the real question, how do I change society without giving up my entertainment quotient? Of course, change is hard, but what we tell ourselves is that it's too hard. Owning a home and paying it off for 30 years is hard, but does that preclude people's doing it? Of course not. They're willing to devote themselves to the things they think are worthwhile. The problem is that people outside of the fascists in this country, which is easily half, probably more, think change is impossible. That's the question. They have convinced themselves that change is impossible. So what the country actually requires to do, to actually change these circumstances, is a purification ritual for the rich and the fascists who worship them, meant to not teach, but awaken. And, you know, perhaps you're familiar with the great soul singer Benny Lattimore. It just goes by the name Lattimore. He had a great song called talking about how he had been abused. And he said, it's time to deal down and dirty. I have to maybe cut, shuffle the cards and bend the rules. Well, that's what we have to do. We have to use the same philosophy that power uses on us. All options are on the table. With the great intellect of Dr. Null accepted, nonviolence as a principle is just as stupid as violence as a principle. You go by the circumstances and what is called for. That's the kind of analysis we have to engage in. What are our objectives as a people? What do we want to accomplish? Where are our allies? How do we organize ourselves? What is our strategy? What tactics do we use? But just pretending that, if we just have a certain opinion or something, that that's going to affect power. It doesn't. There is no magic power in wind. We have to act. And if we can't get it together, if a person can't think a change is possible, then it isn't. It's that simple. So all the excuses aside, I've heard it all, and I can elaborate some of my favorites. Well, I'm just trying to raise my family. Well, if somebody breaks into your house and they steal your stuff, you're going to do something about it? Well, it's no different if Trump does it or if somebody off the street does it. It's the same crime. Or if the gas company does it or if they're doing it to you by your telephone rates. You have to see them the same way. Maybe you have heard of a guy named Sammy the Bull Gravano. He was a hitman for the Gotti mob. And he said that he got asked about politics in an interview I heard once. And he said, the way you have to think about it is you have to realize that these are families. The media, the political class, the corporations, the financial sector, these are all families. And when they have to, they go to war with each other. But usually they work together. But they have their own interests. And if people are stupid enough to fall for one of these families telling them that they have your interests at heart, you deserve what you get for being that stupid. That is willful stupidity. That is volunteered slavery. And if that's what you're volunteering for, then expect the life that goes with it. It's time to deal down and dirty.
You have spoken, and I have listened, as have many others. We will continue this week asking questions, but we have come to the end of our program today. We've run out of time. Thank you for calling and contributing, Daryl and Marcus. Thank you for, and Ed from Jamaica. Thank you for bringing our attention to something we should pause and just take it in. And, you know, rattle it around our brains for a while and see what the effect is. Are we learning anything? It is important to listen and take instruction. I really believe that. And I'm very proud of our instructors. They give us quite a bit to think about. Thank you all. So we'll connect again tomorrow and deal with some other stuff. Of course, we have the Vice President debates, but let's talk along these lines some more because we really need to think this out. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.